Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Welcome to Fly on the Wall Finance. I am your co-host, Tony Shore, and I'm here with our amazing host, the one, the only. I don't have my applause button ready, but Jamie Malm is here. Yes, Jamie Malm. How are you, Jamie?
I cannot complain. That's good to be here.
Excellent. Excellent. How was your past week, your weekend? Everything
well,
good?
I was in your neck of the woods. So I was in Minnesota, Minnesota travel in November, December can be kind of hairy, but you had gorgeous weather. Couldn't complain. It was great to see the home office. We did some good co-hosting of a training event for financial advisors. Maybe we'll talk about that on an upcoming episode, but yeah, always good to be wherever you're at, Tony.
Sure. Yeah, you and I didn't get much chance to interact while you were there. You flew in a little later than you expected. So we were going to get together and spend some more time together. But you had a great meeting with other financial advisors. You were doing some training, helping some people out. I think that's great. I've been busy. I was so busy besides work, with my parents, who are both in their 80s now, both have Parkinson's. So I'm an only child, so I'm dealing with that. And I've mentioned that on the show before, and I keep bringing it up because that's what I do on the weekends now. I drive down to where they're at, and I'm having to take over all of the finances now and all of the Medicare, and it's open enrollment for both of them. And their Advantage plan provider just decided, oh, we're not doing that anymore. It's not cost effective for us. So I have to go through all the paperwork and figure out how to get them on a new plan. As you know, Medicare planning, healthcare planning, and retirement, that's a big one. And I know you've been involved with that for some of your clients as well.
Yeah, it's a tough spot, especially in like our age group, because we are starting to have parents that need somebody to step in. And it can be really overwhelming on all the things that you have to know and be aware of and take care of for them. Plus there's the emotional side of things on if they're open to having you take care of it, or if they feel a little, you know, put out by our involvement, so to speak. So I know that's a tough road to navigate.
Yeah.
Sorry you're dealing with that.
Oh, that's okay. I don't want to bring us down. I'm actually I was laughing before the show because you sent me some show notes and said you wanted to call the show Cockroaches and Credit Concerns.
That's right.
That's one of the strangest titles, I think, of a show I've ever done. And I've recorded quite a few shows over the years and interviewed quite a few people, been on radio a long time, done podcasts a long time. And that's the strangest title yet. Cockroaches and Credit Concerns.
Well, don't worry. We're not going to be talking about actual bugs in your kitchen, but this phrase came from a recent quote from JP Morgan CEO Jamin Dimon, who said, when you see one cockroach, there are probably more.
Yes.
And what he was describing was a few recent fraud cases, some bankruptcies in the credit world. So this is impacting headlines enough that I thought it may be helpful to break down what's really happening, why the headlines sound maybe a little scarier than they are, but also so that we can all be aware, what does this really mean for your savings, your loans, and your long-term plan?
Yeah. So I think that's interesting. I mean, obviously, hopefully there aren't any actual cockroaches.
I hope not also.
All right. Where do you want to begin?
If we see one, it's probably the end of the show and I'm out of here. So
yeah.
let's talk about where the cockroach quote actually came from. So if we rewind a little bit, let's think back to 2008, financial crisis. At that time, a lot of lending moved out of traditional banks and into what we call non-depository lenders. So non-depository is what it sounds like. They can make loans, but they don't actually take deposits like a bank. So sure. Think mortgage companies, online lenders, maybe insurers, pension companies. They operate under looser regulations, if you will. So banks still fund them, and it's actually... the stats that I saw were over $1 trillion in loans from banks to these non-bank lenders. And it's that connection that is keeping the headlines buzzing, if you will.
So basically what you're talking about, let me clarify this and see if I've got this right. So if somebody has a car loan, one of those buy now, pay later plans, I actually bought a car and there's, I think, 0.9% interest or something for so many years, there's probably a non-bank lender behind it, is what you're saying.
There could be banks using these non-depository institutions increased, I want to say 60% or so.
Wow.
After the 2008 crisis. And here is why people are nervous right now. There's a company called Tricolor. It's a subprime auto lender. So think people that have poor credit or have a hard time getting a traditional auto loan, they might go to Tricolor. They went bankrupt after allegations of fraud, essentially using the same cars as collateral multiple times. Hmm. So risky loans, plenty of alleged fraud. And at the same time, you have an auto parts supplier called First Brands. They filed for bankruptcy. Also plenty of alleged fraud, off-balance debt, hidden loans, basically borrowing money from multiple banks without disclosing it on the book. So double dipping is kind of the issue there. And then we have some fake invoice fraud claims at Broadband and BridgeVoice. And that's what prompted the quote from Jamie Dimon. When you see one cockroach, there are probably more. What he was alluding to was, okay, we have these things that as an isolated events, maybe aren't so concerning. But if we're seeing these happen one, two, three, four times, are there additional underlying issues? Yeah. And that's what's concerning people.
Ones that are still under the rug that we can't see or something hiding in the corners. And so right. That is unsettling for people. Whenever people hear fraud, I think they immediately think, here we go again, 2008, right? The housing crisis and all that happened.
Well, that's the correlation that's being made in the headlines, right? And so one thing to keep at the forefront of our minds is 2008 was very different. Subprime loans were what triggered the 08 crisis. And so we immediately hear subprime loans and we get nervous. But in 08, it was subprime mortgages. Today, we're talking about subprime auto loans and a much different impact on our economy overall. The subprime auto loan industry is making up a fraction of our total consumer debt. I don't just know this off the top of my head. I had to look it up, but $300 or $400 billion in outstanding loans compared to subprime mortgages were at, in 08, $1.3 trillion. Ooh. So a fraction of the impact in what we're seeing with subprime auto compared to subprime mortgage.
So even in a worst case scenario, that ripple effect is going to be much smaller.
Yeah, if you think about it, the mortgages, the subprime mortgages were packaged, they're resold, and they were resold globally through things like mortgage-backed securities and complex derivatives like CDOs. And when those went bad, the risk was really widespread. We had a lot of people and a large part of our economy was impacted. Jamie Dimon, the cockroach quoter, he was part of the rescue efforts of one of the first banks to fail in 08 or collapse, I should say. It was Bear Stearns. Bear Stearns had massive exposure to these toxic mortgages. So it was one of the first dominoes to fall. Jamie Dimon, JP Morgan, they stepped in, they acquired Bear Stearns. That crisis was driven by massive leverage issues, big banks borrowing far more than they could cover with their own equity. And that was one of the worst panics to grip Wall Street really since Black Monday. You know, we're talking back to 1929.
The Great Depression, yeah.
Yep. When the housing collapsed, the whole system wobbled and was impacted. Today, we're talking about a much smaller scale, much more contained, but the similarities are what is catching people's attention.
Yeah. So maybe a better comparison is 2023 when a few I remember in 2023, seems a while back, but it wasn't that long ago, I guess, that those banks, a few regional banks collapsed almost overnight. That happened. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was obviously cause for concern. That was headline grabbing. But important differentiation there. That crisis wasn't fraud. That was about interest rate risk and concentrated customers. You had Silicon Valley Bank that had tech startups. You had Signature that had crypto clients. So, you know, rate shot up, confidence vanished, depositors fled. They pulled their money. And even when that happened, the broader economy held steady.
Yeah.
So, important differentiators there as we try to make similarities and we try to draw a correlation between, well, things that happened in the past, should I be concerned? Is this a warning? Is the writing on the wall that this is going to happen again?
Okay. Yeah, I remember it's all coming back to me now that you named those banks, the Silicon Valley and Signature and Silvergate with the cryptocurrency and the tech bubble was after it burst, they had relied too heavily on that. So what's the lesson here for everyday investors then?
I think lesson number one is don't relive old movies. Ask yourself, is the story the same? Are the characters the same? Today, large banks are better capitalized. They're far more diversified. We have a much more concentrated issue than what we saw with the crisis of 08. And really what we want to look at is for our clients, is their plan balanced? Are they not, are they over leveraged? Are they ready for surprises? You know, just have we built a plan assuming there are going to be some things in the markets that go awry, and you should have a plan that isn't just successful when everything goes right, but we've got some built-in buffers and things for when they don't.
Yeah, I think that's really important. So what's next in this that you want to talk about?
Well, I think this is an important reminder that there are seasons to not just our financial lives, but also our economy. And credit cycles have seasons. So when borrowing is easy, businesses and families grow, that's spring and summer. You might have heard I don't know if you're online much, or maybe I'm just a nerd and I follow things like this, but it'll be like, hey, be cautious, winter is coming. What they're talking about then is a hard season, right? And sure. in a credit cycle, when lenders get cautious, that's when we know we're starting to head into fall or winter. And we can see this so many times in history. We can see the railroad boom of the 1800s, the roaring 20s, the housing boom of the 2000s. We just have to be able to recognize, well, what season am I in and plan accordingly.
So where are we at now in this cycle, do you think?
I would say we're somewhere between late summer, like early fall. Credit isn't frozen, right? But because of this, lenders are going to be more careful. So if you start seeing fewer pre-approved credit card offers in the mail, if small business loans are starting to take longer, if lenders are tightening up a little bit, that's because of the season that we're in. Because of some of these isolated incidents, we are going to see maybe some more cautious borrowing. We're going to see banks tighten their grips a little bit. And that just tells us we're going into maybe, hey, it's not winter, but maybe we're late summer, we're early fall, something to be aware of.
Okay. So how does this show up in our daily lives then?
Well, I think we need to do an inventory on how reliant we are in debt, first of all. So your family budgets, if you have credit card debt or you have an adjustable mortgage, you've got a home equity line, really pay attention to your rates and plan accordingly. We don't want to get stuck with something that, for example, oh, I won't worry about that adjustable rate mortgage. That's not going to adjust for 18 months or 2 years or 3 years. So I don't focus on getting that paid down. And now suddenly, now suddenly it's time. And I wasn't paying attention to what was happening in the credit world. And now that rate has jumped up and now I've blown up my budget. If you're a business owner, expect maybe more questions from your lender. We want to stay transparent. And from an investor standpoint, again, and this is kind of basic fundamentals, but don't put all of your eggs into one basket. If you're somebody that sees something that's too good to be true, but you're like, oh, that's a really high savings rate, it's a high income fund, something I saw online, do your due diligence before you jump into something and diversify to be safe.
Good advice. Now, despite all the cockroaches you've been talking about, the markets haven't exactly fallen apart. I mean, we've hit record highs, right?
Yep, that's a key point. It's also something that goes back to the correlation of 08, when we saw the first little inklings of, oh, there's something that may be amiss here. Markets actually did really well. So if you look at scary headlines, they will make that correlation and say, we are right now in the point where you need to be making adjustments. But again, remember, are they the same actors? Am I trying to replay the same movie? Those bankruptcies the companies, the banks that were falling or failing were massive compared to the small amounts that we're seeing now. Big banks, they're strong, they're diversified, they're well capitalized. The portion of their assets that they have exposed to these non-depository financial institutions is extremely small. So just keep the perspective of what this really means in today's market.
Yeah. So most people's accounts just saw normal ups and downs is what you're saying.
Yeah, there really hasn't been any impact yet to the stock market. I am a big believer, though, you have to have your assets allocated to what you can emotionally handle. You know yourself. And if you're going to see your assets take a 20% dip, if that is going to absolutely create panic for you, and you're going to then make a change to your plan driven by that panic, don't put yourself in that situation, right? Be more you're not the kind of investor then that should be exposed to fluctuations like that.
Right. So then you won't have to deal with all the ups and downs or worry with all the ups and downs, right?
Right. You might have to worry.
Boring is beautiful.
Right. You might have to worry that you're taking maybe lesser gains and kind of steadier growth, but you have to think about a worst case scenario because nobody has a crystal ball. I don't know that a worst case scenario isn't on the horizon, but I do know that proper asset allocation, we should have money that we know is going to be there. I hope so money. And the hope so money is the amount that you're willing to take some risk with. And the risk that you're taking isn't, is it going to be there or not? It's, is it going to be there when I need it? And the time horizon of when you need it is really the most important consideration. If you're young and you've got plenty of time and it's like, gosh, if it takes a dip, that stinks, but I've got plenty of time for it to come back up. That's a much different position to be in than I'm a 75-year-old totally reliant upon my assets for income. And if it takes a dip, now I've got to change my lifestyle. Different plans.
Well, yeah, and I think that that makes sense. Now, I would love to have you tell us some, like a practical list of things that people should be doing, a playbook, so to speak.
I think the easiest analogy I can give is think about building a house. You want to build your financial house. So if you hired me to build your house and I said, okay, I'm going to go put 90% of the money that we're going to use to build this into the roof, you would think I was crazy. So we start with a solid foundation. And the solid foundation is making sure that you can cover short-term expenses. It's your emergency fund. It's your cash on hand. You don't ever want to be forced to sell off investments in a panic week. That's your foundation. Then we want to look at how do we build up the walls of the house? Think you're diversifying your income. Where are your income sources coming from? Is it pensions? Is it annuities? Is it dividends? But making sure that the cash flow is sufficient, that once again, I'm not reliant upon having to sell off my investments in a panic week. And then along the way, we want to make sure we're cleaning up debt, we're rebalancing investments. And then the roof of the house should be your, I hope so, money, right? That's the money that is long-term. It's not the foundation of my plan. It's not what's holding the house up. It's not the walls that's creating my income, and it's my cash flow, but it is still playing a vital role. It's just maybe the latter piece of the puzzle that I want to put in place. And yeah. Then finally, I would make sure you have like a worst case scenario, a bad news drill, or a, you know, sit down and be honest with yourself. If XYZ happens, and that's different for everybody, maybe for you it's a 20% loss, maybe it's a 10% loss. But if you see your nest egg drop by that much, how are you going to feel on that day? And what is your plan? First of all, no emotional decisions. Reread your written plan, call your advisor. But again, back to, it has to fit your time horizon. It has to fit your individual risk tolerance.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and again, I know you stress this every single show, Jamie, but everybody's situation is different. Your personal risk tolerance really matters. That's why that's really the first step in the process that you use when you meet with somebody is say, hey, what's your personal risk tolerance? And you have an 11 question, analysis that you use. I think that's great. So, you want to make sure your income is set aside for safer assets. The income you're going to need in those first few years is what you're saying. That way a daily market swing or a 20% drop in the market doesn't affect your grocery money or your rent money, right?
Yep. Let the growth portion ride through the noise, keep the income portion steady and reliable. And just make sure that you have a plan and you have a written plan.
Yeah.
If you don't have a written plan, it's easy to make rash decisions or to get off track and think, gosh, I don't know, maybe I need to make an adjustment here. And you're doing it based on emotion rather than factual decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what's the bottom line here before we go?
I think fair to be concerned, right? We all get concerned when we see things like this.
Oh, yeah.
Panic? No, we have a few isolated incidents in the private lending world, but overall system is much stronger than in 08. So correlations really are not there like the headlines are trying to force them to be. Markets have already calmed down. Focus on what you can control, your cash cushion, your income sources, your diversification, and your written plan.
Well, there you go. I think that's great. And I know you're there to help people review that plan. Jamie, I just have to say, fly on the wall finance, now a show about cockroaches. I hope that, I don't know if this is a trend. Little buggy. So,
yeah.
But what if somebody does need help reviewing their plan?
You can go to our website, which is ironhorsefinancialservices.com. There is a book now button right on the home screen, or you can call our office. That number is 620-377-6456. We never charge for consultations. I'm a big believer that everybody should have access to an expert to sit down, have a private conversation and just say, hey, I have questions. I want to see how this applies to me. I need some help getting a plan outlined. That's what we're here for. We'll walk you through your risk level, your income strategy, your tax picture. That way you can stay confident no matter what headline pops up next.
There you go. I love it, Jamie. Well, great show. Interesting topic. And I'm glad you dealt with this. I've heard a little bit of rumbling about some of this, and I'm glad you set us straight. And the key is don't panic. Work with a trusted financial professional. And listeners, that's it for this episode of Fly on the Wall Finance.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Tony. We will see everybody next week.
That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.